Welcome, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. And our Paradigm Shifters today are people who are very steeped in philosophy and consciousness and are hard at work helping you and I sort of raise our expectations of ourselves, our point of view, and our understanding about the complexity of being a human being and how it's hard to kind of wrestle ourselves to the ground sometimes, I think. Welcome to the show, Dr. Nick Martin and Reverend Linda Martin. I'm so glad to be talking to both of you. Linda, you're an intuitive, right?
Yes, I am. Yes. And thank you for having us, Veronica. We're so delighted to be here with you today.
Oh, I'm really
awesome.
Yeah, I'm really tickled to talk to both of you. And part of the reason for that, which I've mentioned to you, is I saw that you work with ego and spirit. And Dr. Martin, are you also an intuitive?
No, my work primarily involves the psychological realm. And so I'm the ego supposed expert here, whereas Linda is the spiritual expert.
Well, that's perfect because the male ego is supposed to be a big deal, isn't it?
Well, it may be misunderstood and it may be overemphasizing the power aspect of it, though there probably is some truth to it, which we can talk about later if we get to that.
Well, you know I'm teasing you, don't you, when I say that? But, I mean, it is kind of a cliche in our society to talk about the male ego. But what I'm really excited about is I've gone through some of your videos and both of your websites, and I really love, let me see. How did you start working with the ego, spirit, balance, focus? If either of you would like to tell us the beginning of your work on this.
Sure. We came to work together. As Nick was writing, we have a trilogy of books. And as Nick was writing the first book, he wrote the first book in our trilogy of books himself. Ego Therapy, A Method for Healing Your Whole Self. And during that time was when I completed my Doctor of Metaphysics and became an ordained minister, and I began my own healing practice, Dove of Light Healing Ministry, where I started seeing clients and such. And so as he was learning more about this egoic energy and writing his book, and I began to see it, you know, at work with clients and how this our human energy is, you know, at work with us and how people are really striving to awaken spiritually, we both came to see and realize how there truly does need to be two awakenings occurring within us, awakening to our human egoic energy as well as awakening to our spirit as well. And so during this time, as we spent time talking and learning about it, we came to see the need to blend what we're doing together. It just made sense. You know, he was
working
on it.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah. And so we came to write our second book, Ego Spiritualism, Awakening to Your Human and Divine Self. And this is the concept of the need to merge your ego and spirit together to live the life you came here to live. You know, we're all spiritual beings, but we don't need to be more spiritual, but we need to understand that we are spiritual, and we need to help our human egoic energy heal and come into a place of balance so that we can recognize our spirit, because it is the imbalanced ego that prevents us from knowing our own spirit at times.
Well, let's start off by talking about some definitions of ego. I already mentioned and joked a bit about the cliche of the male ego, but through the years I've watched that many people are in ways tripped up by their ego, and maybe we could say a lot of violence is a misused ego and so on. Can you talk a little bit about what the ego is and what its potential is?
Absolutely. There are so much out there that really reflects a misunderstanding of what ego is that takes us away from understanding that energy rather than what it is. So in our work, and I was going to say part of the story that my contribution to ego and spirit was approximately 30 years ago, I had completed my licensing exam, and after 5 years of rigorous study, decided I really didn't want to read another book. I had been reading 5 hours a day, probably for 5 years, and I stopped really reading. And at that time, I was working in a clinical setting, and I stopped reading books, but fortuitously, I started reading people. And I read them through the lives they shared with me as a clinician, as a therapist, as an educator in a clinical setting, as a diagnostician, and so on. And they were teaching me something, and it crystallized in my understanding that they were telling me so much of what their lives are about, and what is going on well or not going on well has to do with the ego energy that they are living. And so that began the process of a 14-year of writing the ego therapy book, which is very detailed and so on. And one of the things
you were saying, just a moment, if I can recap for a sec, is that you were saying watching people as you were, you could see how their lives were actually ruled by how they held the ego. Is that right?
Absolutely. And that led me to understand, like, the understanding that fundamentally, when it comes to this, to the human side of the equation, the ego energy is what we need to better understand. We don't have a much different understanding of our humanity than we had at the time that people like Buddha were talking about the doctrine of no self, anatta, and all his suffering pronouncement that he saw going on in the lives of people in different ways. That what Jesus was speaking about in regards to being able to serve two masters, one being God, one being ego via money. And also, even Muhammad talked about another aspect of jihad, the second less well-known, which deals with the struggle against oneself. So we have these great consciousness teachers.
Is that what jihad is? Is the struggle against oneself?
The second meaning is about the struggle against oneself.
Oh, my.
But that's not necessarily understood or recognized in favor of the first primary discussion of jihad involving this need to represent God in one's perception of what God is within that particular faith. But again, the second meaning was, to me, they were saying the egoic energy is what we're working, that's the struggle against oneself at work in people's lives. So
that would lead to the huge defensiveness that it pervades our cultures, right?
Absolutely. There's so much to be talked about, and I'm going to try to share that with you about how tens of thousands of people had taught me over a long period of time was about that ego, first and foremost, is about survival. It's woven into your being to survive. It's not any real different than the brain is in its effort to survive, help us survive, or the heart is in its effort to survive. The ego energy is really about our survival. So fundamentally, it's a positive entity. It's an energy at work, a psychologically based energy that goes to work in our lives to help us survive. And when it's in a balanced place, when we talk about balance in our books, we talk about the power of it, which maybe relates to that earlier question relating to male ego. But it's not just about the power of it. It's also about the flexibility of the energy, and it's also about the vulnerability of the energy. And we go into great detail describing what those different contributors are to that energy. Hmm. And when they are innate, when our energy is balanced, we can do wonderful things both humanly in terms of relationships, in terms of our ability to love ourselves, in terms of our ability to deal with achievement and know our life's purpose, and many other key life areas that we talk about in our books.
Well, and when you said vulnerability, I was deeply touched by that, because that's where we allow ourselves to reformat and to rework things, isn't it?
Right, because we allow ourselves to be imperfect. We begin to recognize the healthy, we talk about healthy human vulnerability, and it's important to be able to allow ourselves to be vulnerable because we are imperfect, and accepting ourselves as we are rather than resisting that sometimes, and we talk about high ego vulnerability in our third book, The Two Voices Within. We talk about the different roles that people sometimes start to live in their lives, whether somebody is a perfectionist or somebody who is striving to be an overachiever or somebody who is striving, who is traumatized and so on. We get into the specifics of how that energy looks and how it's being lived when we haven't come to terms with our vulnerability. There's a healthiness in being vulnerable, but people often get a distance from it. In previous generations, particularly for males, the message is put toward males was it isn't okay to be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sign of weakness, and that was completely off the mark. And that's a reflection of what we mean about getting in touch with the real nature of ego energy. And when it's mm-hmm. healthy and balanced, we can do tremendous things in our we can live the great life we were meant to live, both humanly and as well as spiritually. The door opens, and the divine truth of the love, life, and energy that God is ready there, ready and willing to enter into our lives and become a part of our lives. But when the ego energy is imbalanced, then it actually puts like a wall up. And what Rumi had said, you know, what you seek is seeking you. Well, it's seeking us, but we're not responding to it. Because
well, I just want to link it back to Alan Watts, who had written a book on the spiritual value. I can't remember the exact title, the spiritual value of insecurity. And that touched me deeply at the time. And I'm feeling the vulnerability of the ego has that link to spirit as well, doesn't it? Maybe Dr. Reverend Linda could mention something about that.
Definitely. And we have to learn to embrace all that we are. And when we allow the egoic energy to come into a place of balance and we, you know, understand that and accept who we are and come to love who we are, then we more easily hear that voice of spirit that is within us. We connect and we know that we are one with spirit. And that idea of separation or any false beliefs we may have been carrying regarding that, they just melt away because we open our hearts and we open our minds to the truth of who we are then. And you know, we're here as a human race, as a human being, to learn to be human. And we didn't come here to take physical form and, you know, have a human experience to strive to just be spiritual. We came to experience humanity. And so part of this experience of being human is to understand who we are as a human being. And the more we embrace all that we are as a human being, then it assists and it opens the door, you know, within ourselves to our spirit.
But I think both of you have been talking about how intrinsically we have a drive for survival or drive to have our own personal impact into the world. And I think, Dr. Martin, you said something about sometimes it's driven by trauma. You hear what I'm trying to say?
What I was referring to is the ego in its effort to help us survive. What I explained about people who have been traumatized by either war or physical victimization or sexual victimization or some other encounter where they almost lost their lives or were put into that danger. What the ego energy is trying to do, the ego is always trying to help us. Even when it's trying to, when it brings it into suffering, it's really trying to help us survive. In the case of the traumatized person, what they're absolutely doing, the ego is trying to help that person stay connected to the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And you might say, well, why does it want to do that? The answer is because its purpose is to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
And its best strategy, even though it doesn't have an intellectual capability, is to help that person stay connected to the trauma so that the repetition of the trauma doesn't happen again.
So what you're saying is that it's programmed, right? Our egos are programmed?
Well, I think it's programmed to the extent that it's an energy existed within our being, and I want to say programmed because the word programmed, I guess it might be say it's inborn. It possibly could be the case that yes, that it is, and it's got this survival emphasis. Unfortunately, when it becomes imbalanced, whether it's a vulnerability issue or a power issue or a flexibility issue, it brings us into a lot of suffering, a lot of difficulty. It does, because the ego does not have an awareness, it doesn't have an intellect, it doesn't know it's doing that. It doesn't know itself, and this is another one of the things we talk about, how people misunderstand ego. They talk about it as if it's got this intentional means to try to harm us, and it doesn't. It doesn't have an awareness of itself. It doesn't have an awareness of you, and it doesn't have an awareness of God. There have been people who've talked about the ego is if it's directly out to oppose God or edge God out, the ego doesn't know who God is.
Mm-hmm.
The ego doesn't have that awareness. It's, if we go beyond the point of talking about what it is, we don't understand what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the paradigm shift that has awaited us and that you, Linda and I are speaking to is about getting a better, deeper, thorough, comprehensive understanding of this energy. You know, the analogy, and all the great changes in evolution, whether we're looking at technology or otherwise, whether it's our workings with the brain and the heart or telecommunications, they all came about as a result of a better understanding of energy. Energy. In this case, our effort is to talk about human egoic energy, having a deeper, more effective understanding of that energy, because the more we shine light on it and we understand what it is and what it's not, the closer we become to being able to tune in, which is part of, we talk about ego medicine, our ability to tune into our own specific ego energy. And we talk about that across all three of our books, because we can't just leave people out there wondering, well, how do you do that?
Well, I just want to interrupt you for a second. Ask Dr. or ask Reverend. It's hard for me to get all the titles right.
You can call us Nick and Linda.
Okay,
yeah, that'll
be
simple.
that sounds great. Easier. But I was just thinking that. So, Linda, in your spiritual work, do you let's use terms that people are using easily these days, which is creating our reality and so on. Can we use, for example, when you're talking about the depth of spirit, which of course I want to live in all the time, but can we use our ego to then hook up to spirit and create our reality at a much higher level?
Oh, definitely, yes.
Is that
that is what we're talking about, that emergence of ego and spirit coming together as one. And, you know, we're that is the need. We feel so strongly that this is our next step on our evolutionary path to move in this understanding that we are here to heal and bring the egoic energy into balance. Because this energy is our human energy, and it helps to... It's a driving force for us as a human being. When the ego is in a place of balance, it will be a driving force for us to take action in the world. And, you know, to create our reality as a human being, this is a physical reality. You know, everything starts with a thought at first. And if we're living with an imbalanced ego, the thoughts we may have could be, you know, the imbalanced ego will say, well, who do you think you are? You can't do that. You don't, you know, you're not able to, you don't have what it takes to do this. But when you bring your ego into a place of balance, it begins to work with you instead of against you, because the fear that the ego has is no longer necessary. And we must teach this egoic energy within us that this fear it's been carrying for eons of time is really no longer necessary.
Do you think there's a shift going on around the planet regarding the use of the ego, and then maybe we want to dip into the election fervor or something?
You know what? You're absolutely right, and I think that there is a great deal of ego ignorance and ego blindness out there. That we're still, you've seen our website, we talk about the path of consciousness and how many people, and by the way, I have to say this very strongly, everyone is fundamentally an intelligent, well-meaning, and good person. That's woven into their being because they have God within their being.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when our egoic energy is imbalanced in some ways and in some significant ways, it creates tremendous distance from that. We don't live that part of who we are. We don't live that great life, you know, that's available to us because of the lack of access to the truth. I mean, you were asking Linda that question. I was thinking to myself, truth is incredibly powerful, both on a human level and on a spiritual level. And to the degree that we are becoming healthier and in balance, we are able to get more connected to the truth of our lives, of ourselves, and it's good. That's a good thing. It may be painful to at first walk through it, but once we get there, we can move beyond it and embrace all of the other good things about ourselves and about the world we live in.
But I often think that the truth, as people awaken and use the term, which I love, As people awaken, truth changes, doesn't it? It has a lot of different expressions, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You know, because many truth will, we create, as you've said, our reality, and we create this through what we believe to be true. And of course, we all start out as children being instilled with certain beliefs in our lives, and we, you know, we're taught that this is our truth. But as we grow, we come to see, well, maybe this isn't the truth that it feels right for us. And so we must come to, you know, this allows us to come to know ourselves and to, again, awaken to the truth we each hold within us. Truth can only be found within ourselves. It's not something that we can find outside of ourselves. However, other people can assist and guide us and bring, you know, ideas that might feel like truth for us, but it's up to us to, you know, look at this and see, is this truth for us?
So you feel like we each have our own, like, identity, our own purpose?
Yes, I do believe that, but I think I wanted to add on to what Linda was saying about, we talk about in our books about the relativity of truth, and that's a recognition that on a human level, different persons have different levels of truth. But one of the things about truth, if we really connect to it, is that it's healthy and it's healing. Mm-hmm. If we are truly connecting to truth, it's helpful, it's healing, and it's healthy. And in fact, one of the chapters in our book talks about the morality of ego spiritualism, which really is about truth will help us heal. And it may be that your healing and my healing, because our egoic energy is different, and what's relative to what I need and what you need is different. But the essence of it is how it helps us to heal when we connect to it from where we're coming from.
And the question that you asked of, do we each have a purpose? I believe when we come to truly embrace and love ourselves, all aspects of who we are, the purpose just becomes clear. Because I think one thing that people might get confused about maybe is the idea of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to think that purpose has to be some, you know, grandiose thing they have to do, or, you know, and that's not really what purpose is about. It's coming, when you come to that place of peace and understanding within yourself that you are enough, that purpose is it's just there.
It's acceptance.
And you feel it, and you know it.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me?
Well, what about, like, for example, and this is for both of you or either of you, but I often wonder about, for example, with the ego, if a person needs to use their identity to put their purpose, if you want to go back into that, which is, I know it's a beingness, but if you have a special gift or two, and part of that is considered to be the purpose, the person needs to use the ego to put it forward. Isn't it kind of a driving force or an engine or a supportive force or something?
Absolutely. When our ego is in a healthy place, it leads us toward our purpose, which in many respects is often a matter of service, the kind of service we each choose to undertake in our lives on the human side of things. And the ego, when it's in a good place, helps us live toward a healthy purpose, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
When it's unhealthy, let's say it's high ego power, it's driving me toward making a lot of money or, you know, accomplishing or achieving more than somebody else is achieving.
So if I make a lot of money, I'm a better person than you, which is a very prevalent thing, which is not true. It's not true, yeah.
But that's the non-reality ego-based think or ego-related thinking that people get into.
Mm-hmm.
They do associate worthiness or worth or importance or significance or power with how much they have of anything.
Right.
And that's reflective exactly of what you're just saying there of that distortion. Now, some people wake up. I think you look at a lot of pro athletes or even musicians or artists that, you know, they're very successful, but they don't look very happy.
Right.
And it's partly because the ego power in some cases, they are actually suffering, you know, and they suffer as they move toward drugs, or they suffer as they move toward narcissism or anything that may happen that that's an excellent example of what happens to people when the ego power is connected to achievement or purpose or accomplishment. It actually gets distorted, and you know, they don't understand that what they're using their talents for is very much about themselves and really not about the service that they can use those talents for that may benefit not only themselves, which they can and they should, but also the other people that are they become connected to those talents in whatever way, shape, or form that they come.
So it's a contribution that if we looked at it that way, it would be a
absolutely.
Little
absolutely. I mean, if a person is, it doesn't matter what form of work or, you know, the service they engage in. You know, anybody and everybody's service is of importance. If you really sat down and looked at all the, whether it's somebody who's collecting the garbage or somebody who's delivering news or somebody who's, you know, being a surgeon, they're all important in their own way. And it's sometimes understanding the service connected to that, which can help people realize that they've got this purpose and they're living their purpose.
So how do you help people? There's just so many facets of this subject to explore, but how do we help people to drop in and allow, let's go back into the ego is usable rather than the ego uses us. How do you get people in there, you know?
Well, we talk about ego medicine at the very core of this. The strategy for enhancing and bringing our ego into balance is really something referred to as ego medicine. And ego medicine has three major contributors that we can make use of. The first one is simply beginning to understand what ego is and what it's not. If we don't lay that foundation, we are going to be off to different places. For example, when we hear about ego as being only a negative entity, it's not a positive entity. That's not correct. That's not accurate. It's involving our survival. Or when we hear that the ego entity or ego should be dissolved, disowned, defeated, it's the imbalance that needs to be dissolved, disowned, defeated, but not the ego in and of itself. So these are some, or the notion it's an intentional thing, that it has an awareness of what it's doing to you in your life. All those things are the first step. They lay the foundation of ego medicine, which is understanding what ego is. The second important step that we talk about is tuning into your ego energy. Your ego energy is different and unique from mine and others. And we, in our books, provide examples of the mirrors in our life where you can see your ego energy at work, whether it's in the close relationships that you have with people and where they're at, are they healthy or unhealthy, whether you are able to like and love yourself as you are, or whether you have issues regarding that involving self-esteem and conditional approaches to love, whether you are achieving your potential, and so on. We said those are the mirrors that help you to tune in to where your ego energy is.
So this, let me try something. So if one of the things you're talking about is self-esteem, if a person has really difficult self-esteem inside, their presentation might push other people away because they're trying to push their way into being recognized. Is that right? And is that
well,
the ego?
It definitely can have a negative effect. The self-esteem that they have, I guess you're describing as maybe low self-esteem or no self-esteem. They have a difficult time liking and loving themselves. And many times that can be difficult for people to work with and understand and may lead them to keep their distance. One of the things that I talked about within treatment is that the most important relationship that you can have with in your life is the relationship with yourself. And that is being able to like and love yourself as you are, even as you grow. That so much good and positiveness comes to us when we are in that place. Some people have too low self-esteem. Some people have too much self-esteem, and they don't understand that that can be just as destructive. Being in love with yourself in a narcissistic way is just as destructive as having too little. You may not feel as bad as having low self-esteem.
Well, you know, Nick, you know what I say? People say to me, it's not all about you, you know. And I go, well, actually it is, because my thing is...
In a healthy way, yes, it is. But
yeah,
it, you
because
know,
nobody else going to figure that out, you know, if your self-esteem
right.
needs to be boosted, right? Because they can't see.
I just want to add one more thing that you, ties in with what you asked, mentioned earlier about the political circumstance. And I did a blog on this, on the healthy energy. Well, they were talking about, you know, brought it up that, you know, one candidate had low energy, and they made that a bad thing, and the other candidate suggested that, well, high energy is really great. And my response to that is, no, it can be just as harmful, because if it's not healthy, it's not good.
Right.
You can be full of the need for power, which is high energy, but if you're consumed and intoxicated with it to the point that you're blind to who you are, what you're doing, and what you're saying, that's not good. And I'm hopeful that maybe more people will be able to tune into that and see that for what it truly is.
That's really an interesting thing, because I don't think people are, like, for example, when we're talking about the ego, there are, and you can talk about this better than I can, I'm sure, but I watch kind of fashions in the way we postulate and the way we cheer certain things and so on. And so there's like huge, bulky sections of mankind that act this way, and that changes the nature of actual truth in a lot of ways, does it not?
Yes, I'm going to try to understand your question. The perceptions, could you repeat that again, Veronica? I want to
okay.
make sure.
I guess what I'm thinking about is that we have in our culture kind of a mass approach to what a successful ego looks like. And sometimes that mm-hmm. has nothing to do with the individual reality of tuning your ego, fine-tuning your ego. So here we have the election thing, and it's almost like you've got all these people convincing everybody to approach it this way, to approach it mm-hmm. with narcissism, if you will, or approach it with greed, or approach it with, I don't know, I just feel like there's huge groups of people that are bought into holding their ego a certain way.
You're right, you know. Given these ideals to believe, to, you know, to be, but the truth is that the egoic energy is a unique energy in each and every one of us. It helps to shape our personalities, our characteristics, and as we know, we're not all the same. And a
thank
big
heaven.
Part exactly, yes, there's a reason for that. And a big part of the message that I believe is so important is to change our idea of the ego being a negative energy, because when we are thinking that that is true, we're thinking there is something negative within us, because mm-hmm. the ego is within us, correct? So if we are believing there's this negative energy within us, you know, that's not a healthy message to put out there, to give to people. And we need to change this idea so that we can begin to embrace all that we are, our humanity, and every aspect of who we are. This is how we can heal. And when we change a part of ourselves, then this will eventually affect the collective whole. We cannot know peace in the world until we know peace within ourselves.
Yes, and that's part of the shift, isn't it?
It is. It's part of the shifting that we are moving through, and this coming to know our egoic energy, learning about it within ourselves, healing what needs to be healed, and taking a look at who we are and embracing it, helping, loving ourselves enough to heal what we need to heal within ourselves. And that is our evolutionary path. That is the shift that is occurring throughout mm-hmm. our world. Mm-hmm. That we need to know what we're doing, you know, first of all. And we believe that coming to know this ego is a big, big part of this shift that we're moving through.
I love that.
Can I add that I think your question was not only about individual consciousness, but also collective ego and consciousness, and that being at work. And you're absolutely correct. I think out there, when we look at even our country, we are a great country. We're doing wonderful things. But there's an emphasis on materialism and commercialism and other things that are pseudo-empowering to many people. And unless we awaken, we're kind of moving in a direction that's not healthy in that regard. And that's
because
part of why
it's not service, is it? It's not service. from the heart. It's commercial.
It's service to oneself for the most part, you know, that, more than anything. And that depends on where one's coming from with that. It's a balance that we need to be able to exercise in our work and our service. Again, there's nothing wrong with serving ourselves. And one of the rules we talk about is the martyr. People think, well, I have to sacrifice my life for other people. And you don't have to do that. There's enough abundance for everybody. And you can share within that abundance, and others can share within that abundance. But the problem is that people get locked into this notion of the more and more and more and more I can get. And the reality is, and they equate that with happiness. So we are a society, I believe, that is heavily into pseudo-happiness based upon acquisition of wealth and materials and so on. And we have no real, there's a lot of ego unconsciousness about not really knowing what genuine happiness truly is. Genuine happiness is much closer to a person who is at peace with themselves, with the people in their life, with the people in their world. That's what genuine happiness looks like. Genuine happiness is somebody who is motivated by love in their dealings with the world and their dealings with themselves rather than fear or anger. So it's that misunderstanding. But when our ego energy is in balance, whether it's individually or whether it's collectively, we have no clue about happiness, and people are trying to find it. They're trying to, and the commercial industry loves to sell us happiness, in the form of whatever they think that will deal with our physically based needs.
Facelifts, hairdos, great shoes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Whatever they're selling, that's going to promote happiness. But again, that's what confuses people, because that's not where happiness can be found.
I know.
So you can buy.
Well, tell me, do you think it's changing? Do you think it's changing these days?
I don't think it's changing any significantly. I think we still see a sizable number of people pursuing that version of help of happiness, because it's sold so relentlessly in the media. The media is powerful. It's a very powerful media, and unless you are awake and what that really means when you start getting caught up in accruing things, you're going to probably be locked onto the definition, if you want to refer to it as that, as to what it means to be successful, what it means to be happy. Again, these were things that were taught to me by people over time, that they realized that they had been successful in their work, they had been successful in their monetary income situation and so on, but they weren't very happy.
Yes, and, exactly.
I mean, you know that. I know you know that, and many people do know that, but it's one thing to intellectually get the insight that, that's not the means to happiness. But it's another to have the experiential insight, which is, I really get it. I really know I'm just wasting my time trying to chase the next thing that will make me feel pseudo-happy.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the problem is people don't know how do you get to the place that Linda and I are talking about. And that's why we're putting a lot of detail and emphasis on what that looks like and how you get there. And so you mentioned earlier, how do you make this transformation? Because that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a transformation from being egoically unconscious to becoming egoically conscious. And as we become that, we begin to see more and more and more about what's going on. And then we can, if we move our ego into balance, the door opens to more and more of our spiritual essence and what's available to us.
Can I jump to, and that helps us create a reality of our deeper preference?
Say that again.
Does it help us create our reality? Does it help us manifest when we become more attuned to who we really are?
Absolutely, because if we start to connect more to the truth, one of the great gifts we have is to be able to create the life we live.
Mm-hmm.
We can create that life, but it's better to create a life based upon truth, both human and divine, rather than belief that's distorted.
Many people live through the ego unconsciously.
Right.
They are completely unaware of how this egoic energy is at work within their lives. And the ego can work against you if it's imbalanced and it's working from fear, or it can work for you and with you if when you bring it into a place of balance, when you heal what needs to be healed within you. And in doing that, it gives you that opportunity to live the great gifts that we have been given. and the gift of creating life. And you know, as we create and manifest in our lives, we're doing that anyway. We're creating our life, whether we're aware of it or not. We are constantly creating because that's who we are. You know, we are of God in physical form. We are God in expression in physical human form. And as such, we are the creator of our lives. So if you are living in an imbalanced ego and you're living through fear, you are creating this kind of life.
Mm-hmm.
But when you bring the ego into balance and you allow the ego and spirit within you to merge together and you have the unity within yourself, you will create a life of unity and peace and love as mm-hmm. well. And, you know, so we are always creating.
How do you work with people, Linda? Are you an energy worker? Are you a reader session person?
Yes, but both. Yes, to all. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm a spiritual medium, mm-hmm. and I also do vibrational energy healing, sound healing.
Wonderful.
And, yeah, so I work with people a lot in that way. It's kind of an overall healing aspect that I work with. And then, of course, all the workshops and things that we do as well.
So I asked you, Nick, although it doesn't matter which of you answers this, but are we programmed? Is this what we're talking about? Is our ego programmed and it's up to all of us to unearth its flexibility, its vulnerability and all that? Are we programmed?
Great
by
question, and we address that in our books. The ego energy, in terms of its survival emphasis, to me, and that goes back to your early question, I would agree, that's programmed to help us to survive. The same way your heart is programmed to help you survive and your brain is programmed to help you survive. What happens in people's lives is the energy that they are can be impacted by circumstances that may be playing out in their lives. In some cases, they may be social circumstances. A person may be residing in an abusive, neglectful family.
Hang on.
It creates a sense of disempowerment or weakness, and they may become the victim. So the ego didn't choose to be the victim. The ego energy became the energy of that person as a result of what they encountered in their lives. So abusive relationships can take a person who's fundamentally healthy, and if the person gets involved with the wrong person, that can damage their ego energy. Many children, you know, in families that, you know, that are dealing with neglect or abuse actually were probably born with healthy ego energy, but then as a result of what they encountered, it was in their social experiences, and particularly in the familial circumstance, can weaken that energy.
So but can they recover themselves? Can people
absolutely
recover?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's yes, they can. I think it becomes, that's the hell of child abuse, because we talk about ego flexibility, and ego energy when we are children is very permeable or flexible, as we now refer to it, meaning kids get downloaded onto their hard drive of their mind all kinds of nutty stuff that parents sometimes say to them,
mm-hmm.
whether they're unattractive, whether they're stupid, whether there'll never be anything in their life. And that becomes cemented into what we call their ego space.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of abuse, emotional abuse, mental abuse, that gets crystallized. And we use the term engrams that form just sort of in the brain. There's actually a physiological change that takes place that forms in conjunction with that thought, I'm unintelligent, I am ugly, I'm whatever. And parents don't realize that they are doing, if they mistreat their children in a destructive way, in the way they handle them, that's not helpful. Just back to your question about culture, back in the generation I grew up in, the parenting was very authoritarian.
Yes.
The idea, parents thought that if you were a good parent because you had control, and you were, you know, you have control over your kids, and it didn't matter how you got it. You could do it verbally, you could do it physically, you could do it, you could shame them, you could humiliate them. You know, one of the iconic figures on television was Archie Bunker,
right.
All in the Family. Archie personified that approach to dealing with kids. Children are to be seen and not heard, and all of that. And that wasn't healthy for the generation coming up.
But that was reflective of a mass ego stance that was taken at the time anyway, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's part of, I believe, the tremendous rebellion that played out in the 60s, whether it was about civil rights or about women's rights or the challenge of various institutions, religious institutions, governmental institutions. All of that was really a response to the authoritarian strategy of treating a human being egoically. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's funny, when you work within this field, you can see all this stuff happening so much. When I see the rates of, I want to call it parentlessness or fatherlessness or motherlessness that are growing up, going on in our society, and how that can be destructive to the ego energy of a young person. I deal with lots of young people who tell me in their evaluations that they both love their father and they hate him, or you know, they say other things. And partly what they're saying is, I love this person. I want to be connected to him. I want him to love me. But boy, I'm so angry with this person for failing to be there. Kids can deal with fatherlessness and motherlessness, and that's a societally large thing that's going on that has egoic implications for large groups of people.
Well, that's kind of scary. So my question of both of you is back to kind of what I was implying earlier. Can children, for example, who have been massively abused as little kids, this is just an example, can that be deprogrammed? Can they recover a purified ego or an ego that's rapport with life as a creative force?
They can heal. They can heal, we have that ability and that capability to heal, and this is where we need the assistance of another. You know, in some of the work that I do inner child regression for that purpose. You know, to assist people in healing the child within them. Everything that we experience in our life, it's part of who we are, and if we go through any trauma or, you know, anything along those lines and it isn't dealt with, it isn't healed, that energy will still live within us until it is healed, until we do take a look at it. And many people go through life, they experience traumas or whatever it is, you know, the abuse that they have dealt with, and they just move on. And they're carrying all of that with them.
Right.
And so definitely healing is possible, but it has to come from the person. You know, using assistance from another that can assist them through the process of healing, but healing ultimately comes from within ourselves. And it is first us saying, yes, I want to heal, taking that first step to truly look at ourselves, to embrace all that we are, even the parts that are dark and we don't want to look at. But when we can look at them, we allow them to be released. We allow them to come up, and we allow ourselves to.
It's fascinating.
And that, again, helps the ego to heal. It helps us to awaken more to that spirit of who we are, and we start to realize we're not separate. We're one on this earth. We're one in God. And, you know, we have within us the life, love, and energy of God. We are God in expression here on earth. But we cannot see that or get to that place if we're carrying a lot of baggage with us that's preventing us from knowing this.
Well, this might be why our awakening, our evolution as a species, is a little bit slow.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you think of the number of people that have been damaged in wars and all kinds of violence, all out of whether it's kids being battered or sexually abused or whatever, and without parents, as you mentioned. No matter what it is, it's just really prevalent. And I'm like, wow, how can we get the egos retrieved? How can we retrieve what I consider, from what you're saying, the wonder of an ego that is there for our use, right?
I guess I would just add one other thing to what Linda was saying, and it deals with this ego medicine, which is our primary approach to working with people. I mentioned understanding what ego is and what it's not. I mentioned tuning into one's ego energy is important. The third part is something called ego-related reality-based thinking. It's kind of a linkage, and you're probably familiar with cognitive therapy and how important it is to kind of make use of reality-based thinking to kind of heal or to remove the mental virus that lies within our mind, similar to when they try to fix a computer and they get rid of the virus that's on the hard drive so that it can work better.
Right.
And this form of therapy, the ego-related reality-based thinking, is really kind of looking at the power-related or flexibility-related or vulnerability-related thinking that has been stamped in, targeting it, which is what we talk about specifically. The Ego Therapy book is 658 pages, a very thorough book that gets specifically after, because not everybody has the same issues. I can remember my own childhood growing up. I know that you weren't supposed to have a problem. You weren't supposed to have a problem. So as a child growing up, I kind of didn't allow myself to have a problem or mm-hmm. take a problem to somebody else. It was sort of, and that promoted for me and my ego functioning an unhealthiness, a high ego vulnerability. And I was out of alignment with my imperfection because I'm going to have problems. I was going to make mistakes and all of those kind of things. And so you kind of realize as you learn that that's not reality, that's not true, that you can't have a problem or you can't express sadness or you can't cry. All the things we told kids, or at least we told males in many respects, that were just destructive and harmful, mm-hmm. that weren't true, they weren't reality. That's a key part of this process of healing is seeing what the ego-related, non-reality-based thinking I am using, even that I don't know I'm using, but it's still there and it's working, and to supposedly keep me well and survive, but actually suffering as a result of it, mm-hmm. and deleting it. It's sort of like deleting this nonsense, this non-reality-based thinking, this non-truth, unhealthy beliefs, and replacing it with truth. Something I said earlier, I said it's empowering when we get connected to truth intimately, our truth, divine truth. There's a natural healing process that unfolds as we work toward that end, and that's what this business of ego medicine is about.
Do you two work together? I'm going to have to draw this to a close, but of course I could ask a million more questions. But do you two work together with people? So if someone comes to see you, do you bounce it around and take them through past life regression or inner child regression?
No. I do the past life regressions. I typically work with clients. Nick and I work together in presenting and doing workshops and interviews and that sort of thing. As far as just working individually with a person, that's what I do.
Okay. It's fascinating work, I'm sure. It's just wonderful. And then, Nick, do you still work with people individually, or are you doing more of the writing and presenting?
Well, I do the writing, but I also am a consultant. There's an Office of Vocational Rehabilitation here where for people who are experiencing, whether it's a learning disabilities challenge or a medical or physical challenge or an emotional challenge, in their development, in their career development, that affects their career development. So I may see lots of high school students or adults that are trying to get on with their lives and trying to get retrained or to find ways to get beyond the issues that they're affecting them so that they can develop their potential. And so I spend a lot of time when I'm not doing this work here, which is really primary for us, in that regard.
Well, that's pretty interesting too. So you both cover different aspects of kind of the same journey there. It's wonderful. And how can people get hold of you? I know that people are going to want to talk more to you and find out about buying your books. Do they buy them on Amazon or from you?
Yeah. So our books are available on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, and Balboa Press. And you can get to our books through our website. We have two websites. Our one website is egoandspirit.info. That's egoandspirit.info.
I love that name.
And my website for my healing ministry, which is Dove of Light Healing Ministry, is lindammartin.net. lindammartin.net. And people can, you can contact us through our websites, learn more about us. You can find out what services I offer.
Dove of Light is a great name, isn't it? That sort of gives me a sense of freedom of spirit rising in the middle of it all. Wow,
yeah.
I've really enjoyed speaking with both of you, and I hope we can do that again, and I'll have more work to do to learn more about your work, and I'm excited.
Well, we appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and to speak with your audience, and anytime you want us back, we'll be ready to go.
I'm ready for that. Thank you very much. And this is Veronica Entwistle saying, oh boy, we've learned a little bit about ego and spirit. We have more to learn. And thank you for tuning into Paradigm Shifters. You can be in touch with me, VeronicaEntwistle.com. And many blessings.